Welcome in Vegas, Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the... We are mallardless on this Thursday, but boy oh boy do we have a lot to talk about. We've got kind of a breakdown of what happened in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final between the New York Rangers and the Florida Panthers. We'll get to that in hour number 2 along with some one-timers, some information, some updates on Gabriel Landeskog and his endeavor to return from really a two-year absence in the National Hockey League, knee injuries, knee surgeries. We'll get to that in one-timers along with a little bit more discourse on Sheldon Keefe as the new coach of Chris Chapman's New Jersey Devils. We're also going to touch on the Vancouver Canucks and their media locker cleanout day, whatever you want to call it, their post-mortem, if you will, with the media, where it becomes very clear that the Vancouver Canucks' main adversary is the media up in Vancouver. It was a pissy day all the way around for the Vancouver Canucks, but we're going to start here with a full preview of the Western Conference Final. That kicks off tonight. Puck drop a little after 5:30 p.m. local time here in Vegas between the Dallas Stars and the Edmonton Oilers. It is the second time that Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the merry bunch of gentlemen from Edmonton are in a conference final, and they've never won a game at this level. Like, they've never won a game at this round. We figured it'd be as good a time as any to really dive into this one. We're going to look at forwards, defense, goaltending, special teams, coaching, before we ultimately give our full preview, full prediction of what we expect to happen in the Western Conference Final. So that's the rundown of the show. That's what we're going to get to you today over the next 2 hours. But Chris Chapman, it was your birthday yesterday. We're going to start there with you. I know that you said you're going to kind of push this off until Friday, but you said something as we were going off the air yesterday and catching up with Chapman. You talked about the Cookie Puss from Carvel, correct?
Yes, I love Cookie Puss.
Okay, so it's been bothering me pretty much all evening long yesterday, and I've been thinking about it at various times today. Did you ever get a Fudgy the Whale?
Yes.
Because, like, if you've gotten a Cookie Puss, I feel... Okay, so which, in your opinion, is better? Because, like, I've had Fudgy the Whale, but I very much am of that mindset that if you're going to go with a nice ice cream cake, you've got to go fudge. You've got to go Fudgy the Whale. You've got to really lean into the chocolate. But I also really love cookies. So, like, I'm torn because I've only ever had Fudgy the Whale. I've never had Cookie Puss. Sell me on Cookie Puss over Fudgy the Whale right now.
Well, Cookie Puss takes the cake, no pun intended. Maybe there was a pun intended. Because you get a free ice cream cone when you get Cookie Puss. Like, his nose is an ice cream cone. Like, not like a scoop of ice cream with an ice cream cone, like, outlined and drawn on with, you know, frosting or whatever. You get, like, a legit sugar cone with scoops of ice cream inside that sugar cone as his nose. Now, I think Cookie Puss is also a little bit bigger in size. And my favorite was at St. Patrick's Day, they would do Cookie Opus, which had more of an Irish... It was basically Cookie Puss, but he was green. So, green being my favorite color, it was always a slam dunk for us. Although my lineage runs through Ireland, we didn't celebrate with Cookie Opus.
When was the last time you had a Carvel ice cream cake?
Ice cream cake? Well,
yeah.
There used to be a Carvel on Fort Apache and Tropicana, but I feel like it closed maybe like 2004, 2005. So that's probably the last time I had, because my now ex-wife got one for me for my birthday, a Cookie Puss. Because when Carvel opened, we would literally go in there and we would buy the flying saucers, which were basically like their take on an ice cream sandwich. And every time we'd go in, I'd say, oh my God, Cookie Puss for my birthday. I want a Cookie Puss. And finally, one year, she got me a Cookie Puss for my birthday. So I have not celebrated any birthdays in New Jersey since, which is obviously where I grew up eating Carvel. I've been to Carvel a couple times since then, but never for a cake. So I'm going to say it's probably right whenever that Carvel closed that was here in town. It was right before that. I wish there was a Carvel. It's been a while for you. Yeah, it has been. I wish there was a Carvel here. Like, I've got my ice cream spots here in town. And
okay.
I'll just give a quick shout. Sorry, not sorry, Creamery. It's over on Flamingo.
Why would you be sorry about that? Like, I'm not gonna dump on you.
That's the name of it. Sorry, not sorry.
No, I know. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. The name is Sorry, that Not Sorry. Little... Yeah. And
yeah, no, I didn't understand that. That was weird.
Listen, next time you are up this way, it's over by the Five Guys and the Jersey Mike's, and there's a breakfast place that I don't know the name of, and a FedEx used to be Kinko's.
Right across the street from the station is what you're saying.
Pretty much, yeah. Literally, like,
okay.
Not directly across, but you know exactly where I'm talking about, that corner.
Yeah, no, I know where it is.
It's Fort Apache and Flamingo. There's a Wells Fargo Bank nearby, Pearl Vision. Boy, I'm just going through every store in that strip mall.
Yeah, you really are.
St. Honorary Donuts. Yeah. The donut place.
Oh my gosh, have you ever had a donut from there?
Yes. It's phenomenal.
They're unreal.
They're really good. Like, I after I came back from France a couple years ago, I had to find something that was really close to the pastries I was eating there. And there's a couple places. That place is really good. And then there's a place a little further up, Fort Apache. That's really good, too, called Cafe Brige, I think is how you say it. Boy, I'm just giving free plugs away like candy.
You really are.
I'm like the gummy bears up in the press box with how easy they're being handed out.
Listen, I've never been too sorry, not sorry. That being said, I'll change that. But St. Honoré.
Oh, it's so good.
It's unreal. And like the coolest part about that place is that they make donuts, they make beignets, and they make out of this world pizza. Out of this world pizza.
I have not had the pizza.
You should. You're not gonna be disappointed. I'm telling you right now, you will like it, you will enjoy it, it's awesome. But like you can go to one place, you can go to a donut house and get a full on meal and dessert and never have to leave your table. It's amazing. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's
you've never been there.
That's
go.
Always a plus, yeah. Boy, we're just giving them out today. But yeah, I have had plus, the beignets and I've had the donuts, and they're both really good, so
Get the Nutella donut. You're not going to be disappointed. I'm telling you right now.
Oh, and John Misterick texts and he goes, "Don't forget, there's an Einstein bagel in that plaza too. How could I forget?"
There you go. So the reason why I decided to dig into Cookie Puss, Fudgy the Whale is mainly because I didn't want to dump on the Edmonton Oilers for the entire opening segment of the show today, but that I feel like is what ultimately we're going to end up doing here, because when digging into Dallas and Edmonton, I feel like there's a clear better team here in a lot of different metrics and a lot of different categories, however you want to slice it. I just look at this matchup and say to myself, the Dallas Stars are better than the Edmonton Oilers. So we're going to take it. Go ahead.
If the Dallas Stars are Cookie Puss, does that make the Edmonton Oilers those little plastic cups that are filled with ice cream that you have to eat with like the wooden stick spoon?
Ooh, I feel like the Edmonton Oilers are not that.
They've got to be a little bit above.
I would say that they're probably like, I don't know, like a knockoff drumstick. You know what I mean? The drumstick's good, but you don't want the drumstick. You want the drumstick. You want the name brand. You don't want, like, the store version of a drumstick where, you know, half the chocolate coating isn't there. the little nugget of chocolate at the bottom of the cone doesn't actually exist anymore, and you're just left feeling disappointed and ashamed. Like, the Edmonton Oilers are like that. They are good on the outside. They look good from far away, but then you start to really dig into it a little bit, and it's not quite a drumstick.
Now, did you guys have those little – it was – I know we used to have it at the Ice Cream Man in New Jersey, and I'm guessing it was probably all across the country. It was like a pink kind of triangle and like a plastic cone, and there was a gumball at the bottom. And every time you'd get that as a kid, you're like, oh, I want that because I want the gumball. and you're always disappointed when you get to the bottom because the ice cream's terrible and the gumball, the flavor lasts like 30 seconds and it's done.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're referencing or talking about.
I don't know what
but
it's
that's
called.
That's as good a place to leave the ice cream donut conversation and dig into the Western Conference Final between the Oilers and the Stars. And again, I have my own unique view of this, but I really feel like when you look at everything on the whole, you will see that the Dallas Stars are a better team than the Edmonton Oilers. High-end skill, best players in the world, all of that aside, I just think when you look at it from a from an objective point of view, it is going to be a big, tall ask for the Edmonton Oilers to punch their ticket to the Stanley Cup Final. Crazier things have happened, for sure, but when you itemize it and you break it down piece by piece, there aren't a lot of facets that you come up looking at the Oilers and saying you like them better than the Stars. So let's start with the obvious one. I know that there's not going to be an argument against this, and I don't think anyone listening is going to argue against this, but if you want to, you can always hit us up on the text line, 702-876-1340. This is my bold proclamation. If you're looking at the Oilers and you're looking at the Stars and you're parsing through goaltending, it is without question the Dallas Stars have the better goaltender between Jake Oettinger, Stuart Skinner, and Calvin Pickard. Like, I'm taking Jake Oettinger all day long. I fully believe that the Dallas Stars are going to get more out of their goaltending than the Edmonton Oilers are going to get out of theirs. They have the edge in this category by a mile. Like, call me when Stuart Skinner has a better than 900 save percentage in the series. Like, at that point, we can talk. But right now, it's clear as day. The goaltending edge lies with the Dallas Stars.
Well, yeah, I mean, if Stuart Skinner is the better goalie in this series, then the Dallas Stars are in big, big trouble. That to me is the most obvious advantage. It's probably the largest disparity between what we're going to go through in terms of units here. Mm-hmm. I think that is it's a massive, massive advantage for Dallas Stars. And I mean, let's put it this way. Scott Wedgwood, probably the worst goalie of the four. If he has to play, that's not going to be a good sign for the Dallas Stars. But I think we don't anticipate seeing him. So distinct edge to the Dallas Stars at the goalie position.
What makes you say Scott Wedgwood might be the worst of the four?
I think only because he hasn't been called upon. And
you've got Jake Oettinger. Why wouldn't
he? Well, that's it, right? And he hasn't played in since probably mid March, maybe early April. But I think the reason I bring that up is because Ottinger's been so good that you haven't really needed to go to Wedgwood for any reason, whereas Skinner has been dicey at times, and you've played Pickard. So I think, I honestly, is Scott Wedgwood worse than Calvin Pickard? Maybe not. I don't know. I hope we don't have to see either one of them. Is kind of the point I'm getting to.
Here's what I would say. This is probably going to make a lot of people that follow the Edmonton Oilers angry, and I don't really care all that much. Scott Wedgwood might be as good as Stuart Skinner.
He might be.
Full stop.
He might be.
I'm not kidding. Like, Stuart Skinner has been horrendous at times during this postseason. He has. Like, you're not going to win with sub-800 goaltending. You're just not.
Yeah.
And Stuart Skinner, for large stretches, has been that. So, in that regard, I think we can move on. We all know goaltending, the edge, firmly goes to the Dallas Stars. Let's talk about an area that favors the Edmonton Oilers. Special teams. Like, they have the league's best power play and the league's best penalty kill. I don't know if anyone recognizes that or knows that or understands that, but the Edmonton Oilers have been every bit as good on the penalty kill as they have been on the power play. They're efficient. They're killing off 91% of the penalties that they take. Now, to be fair, the LA Kings didn't score at all on the power play. They were atrocious on the power play in the first round against Edmonton. But credit where credit's due, the Oilers, their penalty kill, it's been It's been decisive. It's been aggressive when it's needed to be. And frankly, that's where they've shined in a lot of different ways this season or this postseason. It hasn't necessarily been all about the power play. It's cooled off of late, but their ability on the penalty kill to take a lot of things away, they have been the best special teams team in the postseason all playoffs long.
Yeah, but I'm gonna throw this in there. The best special teams is not taking penalties. And the Dallas Stars don't take a lot of penalties, which is why I think while Edmonton may have an edge numbers-wise there, it's not I don't foresee the Edmonton Oilers penalty kill being the difference maker in this series.
No, but their power play might, and the Dallas Stars are 11th best in terms of penalty kill efficiency so far in the postseason. Like, they have not been great on the penalty kill.
No, and I mean, Vegas was able to score a couple. Obviously, Colorado. But I also think you look at who they've played, and they've played two teams that had some success. Vegas found it towards the end of the season on the power play, and Colorado always seems to have a good power play. And it's obviously by virtue of the fact that you've got a guy like Cale Makar out there. So while the numbers may indicate that they haven't been good, I would also say that's a byproduct of who they've gone up against, much like it's been a byproduct for Edmonton on who they've gone up against. You mentioned it yourself. The Kings were terrible.
Yeah.
So the numbers being what they are, it seems to me like they're a bit inflated as well.
So who do you give the edge then to when it comes to special teams?
I'm going to give it to Dallas, despite what the numbers say. I think they
really?
I think they stay out of the box. And I think that they've had a couple days in between games to kind of work on this, right? Like, they went directly from Vegas into Colorado. Mm-hmm. Whereas they've been able to kind of regroup, maybe get a little healthier, maybe get some guys back, maybe get some guys closer to coming back. I think by the end of the series, the Dallas penalty kill will be better than the Edmonton penalty kill in the series.
Yeah, I'm going Edmonton on the special teams. Like, there's not a lot of categories that I'm firmly in belief that Edmonton is better than Dallas. I think on the power play, on the penalty kill, that's all-encompassing. They are efficient on the power play. They are unstoppable at times on the power play. And to be fair to Vancouver and Los Angeles, like, there's a learning curve to shutting down the power play of the Edmonton Oilers. The Kings never figured it out. Vancouver did a little bit toward the end of that series. I think Dallas eventually will, but early on, I think it's going to be a difference maker for the Edmonton Oilers. Like, the reason I think this is going to go six games is largely because of what the Oilers' power play can do in the early goings of a series. So I'm going special teams advantage Edmonton. Okay, let's go defense. I'm gonna read you the defensive players right now for the Dallas Stars and then the Edmonton Oilers. You've got Thomas Harley and Miro Heiskanen, Esa Lindell and Chris Tanev, Ryan Suter and Alex Petrovic played the last game, game six, against the Colorado Avalanche and was pretty good. He gave you more than the 3 minutes a night Nils Lundqvist was. So that's the defensive core right now for the Dallas Stars. No Yanni Hakanpää. That was something in the cards. I think that this is beyond a slam dunk. And then you've got the Edmonton Oilers, who are rolling out with Matthias Ekholm, good defenseman. I like him. Evan Bouchard, scoring a bunch of goals, putting up a lot of points. Then you got Darnell Nurse, Vinny Desharnais, Brett Kulak, and Cody Ceci.
Your
who are you taking, Chapman?
Well, I think the first pair for both teams kind of washes each other out. Like, I feel like Heiskanen and Bouchard kind of are a wash, and Harley and Ekholm, they're both... I like Harley, but I don't feel like he's been as good as he probably could be so far in the playoffs.
So let me just jump in. Thomas Harley has been the more responsible defenseman of the pair in terms of Heiskanen and Harley. I think he's not jumping out to you because
he doesn't have the points.
It's not about that for him.
Yeah.
Heiskanen's the guy that's jumping in. Harley's the guy that's allowing Heiskanen to play that role, and he's doing it wonderfully.
But I think depth-wise, I think I like Dallas, especially their second pair. I mean, I think that's a pair that's probably a first pair on a lot of teams. Maybe not anyone playing still, but some other teams in the league. So I give the edge to Dallas. I don't think it's as massive as a lot of people, I think, would initially think, because while Cody Ceci I'm not crazy about, I think Kulak is okay. Like,
okay, hold on. They do not have a defenseman, the Edmonton Oilers, as good as Chris Tanev.
No, they don't.
And Chris Tanev is the third best defenseman on the Dallas Stars?
Yeah,
maybe the second best defenseman?
It's an interesting dynamic because of the fact that they have guys who like Tanev is probably a first pairing defenseman on most teams, but I think because you mentioned, you've got Harley who's able to play a lot little more responsible defensively. You can have Tanev on that second pair. But I think there's like Darnell Nurse, like I don't know, like He's not good.
And
for what you pay him, if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you need him to be better than not good.
Yeah.
So it's an edge to Dallas, but I don't think it's massive. They're certainly better. But
if Yanni Hakanpaa was healthy and available, it would be beyond a slam dunk.
Yeah. It's
the only reason why you feel like it's close is because Dallas is running five defensemen. That's
right.
The only reason.
And I'm not in love with Ryan Suter.
Four defensemen then. Right? Like, though I'd make the argument, like, Ryan Suter's been better this postseason
than he was a year ago.
He
was really, really bad in that Western Conference final.
Right. But he's been pretty solid for them so far in this
run. Yeah, he's been fine. He hasn't been an issue.
Okay, so final say. Defense, who are you giving it to?
Dallas.
Okay. So you are a clean sweep right now with the Dallas Stars. You think they've got the better goaltending, the better special teams, and the better defense.
Well, no. See, I didn't really get to comment on the power play. I said I think a penalty kill, I think they'll be better by the end of the series. Edmonton's clearly better on the power play.
Okay. All right. So 2-1 right now. Dallas better defense, better goaltending, and the Edmonton Oilers overall better on special teams. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do coaching because I want to save forwards for last.
Okay.
Coaching is interesting because I really like Chris Knobloch a lot. He's the antithesis of Jay Woodcroft, right? Like there's no other way around it. Like Chris Knobloch to me seems like a really nice guy, pretty reasonable, very level-headed, very clear in terms of how he addresses people in the media. I've got time for Chris Knobloch. Problem is, it's the first time that he's going through this at this level. Pete DeBoer is one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League, full stop. Full stop. When you have been in this scenario 5 out of the last 6 years with your third different team, at some point, you just have to look at Pete specifically and say he knows what the hell he's doing, right? Like, it's very clear. You can make a conference final in back-to-back years with the same team. That's all well and good. But when you can take three different teams at three different stages of their windows and get to this level, it's pretty remarkable what Pete DeBoer has been able to do over the last 6 years. So I don't imagine Pete's going to get out-coached in this. I'm giving the coaching matchup to Dallas.
Well, and like you and Darren mentioned yesterday as well, Paul Coffey, that's his first time going through this as well. So, Pete's taken two teams to Stanley Cup Finals. This is the fifth team, I think it is, that he's taken to a conference final. So, I mean, the only place he really didn't have success was Florida, and he was there at a time that, well, they really weren't very good, and it didn't seem like they were very committed to being good. Anywhere Pete's been where the team has been committed, he's had success. And I think I'm with you on Knobloch. I think he's the right guy for the job. I didn't know anything about him, but experience has to mean something here.
Sure.
And Chris Knobloch may go on to win a Stanley Cup with the Edmonton Oilers. He may be that good of a coach. He seems to be able to push the right buttons. He dug this team out of a hole that they were in. But the experience factor for me, and I think it's the unknown with Chris Knobloch as well, I give the edge to Dallas. And look, I think bench-wise, I know Steve Spott was maybe not the most popular guy here, but he's a good assistant coach. And I think coaching-wise, top to bottom, I like the Stars.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Okay, so last category, up front forwards. Who are you taking? Because there's no question the two best players in this series are Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. However, depth wins you playoff rounds, especially the deeper that you go. Where do you lean on the forward core?
It's interesting because I think it's close. You've got Zach Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who are both guys who can score a ton of points, give you a ton of points. I like Warren Fogle. I know, Darren, not a fan of their bottom.
What was that take?
Yeah, I don't know.
Seriously.
He wasn't a fan of their bottom six. And look, I don't really believe in Derek Ryan or Ryan McLeod or Connor Brown, but like
who's mad at Connor Brown?
Yeah, like what did Sam Carrick do? You know,
who doesn't like Derek Ryan? Like what are we talking about here?
I think it's so strange because you could make the case that maybe Edmonton has the two best forwards, but then Dallas might have like the next three or four best forwards. Hyman and Nugent Hopkins are producers, but how much would they produce if they weren't playing with McDavid? I don't know. I think Dylan Holloway, he's really young. It's a bit unknown what you're going to get out of him. Evander Kane, I mean, he's Evander Kane, I guess.
Okay.
But I give the edge to Dallas because I think depth-wise, while I think Edmonton has the two best and most dynamic forwards, I don't think that Johnston and Robertson and Pavelski and Duchesne, Ben and Sagan are really that far behind. But depth-wise, they've just got more high-quality players, I think. While they may not have the elite of the elite, they've got a lot of very good players at the forward position. Whereas Edmonton, they have the two elite guys and then maybe two very good. And after that, meh, it's okay.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is how I'm going to frame it. Radek Foxa, Sam Steele, Craig Smith. That's the fourth line for the Dallas Stars.
Which would probably be Edmonton's third line, maybe outside of Warren Fogle.
There it is. There it is. There it is. That's the series in a nutshell, right? You look at the Dallas Stars, Robertson, Johnston, Stankoven, like that's a legitimate top line. You know what I mean? Like Jason Robertson scored 40 goals in the league before. Like that is a legitimate top line. Like Mason Marchment, Matt Duchesne, Joe Pavelski, you haven't gotten production out of Pavelski, but that line has been a driver. Ben Sagan, Dodonov, like that again has been a line that's driven offense for Dallas. And their fourth line, Foxa, Steele, Smith, would be legitimately the best third line that the Edmonton Oilers could field in the Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl era.
I mean, let's ask this question. Jamie Benn, Tyler Sagan, Evgeny Dodonov. They're third line guys in Dallas. I think you could probably sprinkle those guys in the top six for the Oilers. Maybe not Dodonov, but Benn and Sagan certainly would be in the top six, I think, for, I mean, like I said,
those three players alone would make Edmonton infinitely deeper.
That's a really, really good third line.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm with you. I think collectively, as a group, if you're looking at it, it's the Dallas Stars. They have the better collection of forwards.
Well, the other aspect here is Stankoven. The moment has not been too big for him. Like, he has not been shy. He's not been, I think, some guys, they get to this moment and they kind of crumble. It's their first time. They're really young. But we saw it with Johnston last year. We saw it with Harley last year, and now we're seeing with Stankoven, where these are young guys who are stepping in, and they're big contributors for what the Dallas Stars are doing. I think that's why I like them, the fact that they've got these young guys and the moment's not too big for them. Like their production. They're producing for the Stars.
So I think we're all in agreement that in most categories, Dallas is the better team. Official prediction from me. I think it's Stars in six. And the only reason I'm going Stars in six is because I think early on in this series, the Edmonton Oilers power play is going to be a difference maker. It's going to be a factor. It just is. But once Dallas gets a little bit healthier, once Roope Hintz is in the lineup and you're able to kind of lock in 5-on-5 and commit less penalties, I think things will change for the Dallas Stars in respect to shutting down the Oilers power play. And I just don't think the Oilers are going to be able to hang with Dallas 5-on-5, which leads me to believe that Dallas will probably win three games in a row, something like we saw really against Vegas and against Colorado. And I think it's a fairly easy series for the Dallas Stars when all said and done.
Well, I think the Oilers will win a game, maybe two. But I think I just think Dallas is better. I think in so many areas where they need to be better, they're disciplined. I think they've got a lot of leadership. I want to believe that at some point Joe Pavelski is going to have a game where you're like, I can't believe Joe Pavelski is, what is he, 39? Like, I just have a feeling that that game is coming where he lets you know that he is there and he has like this game where maybe he has two goals and you're just like, oh my gosh, where's this Pavelski been all playoffs? And even if it doesn't show back up again, I just feel like he's got one of those games coming.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. So there you have it, the VGK Insider Show official Western Conference Final preview. We both have the Dallas Stars. Chapman, you have them five or six games?
I'm going to give them six. I think Edmonton makes it look better on paper.
All right, Dallas in six. There you go. No need to watch the games, or, you know, do. We're back with more in a moment on the VGK Insider Show. Three observations from watching Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final between the New York Rangers and the Florida Panthers. That's coming up in hour number two of the VGK Insider Show, along with one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. But right now, I feel it best here on the VGK Insider Show to spend a little bit of time with the Vancouver Canucks. Because, like, I look at Vancouver's season as a success. Like, I get it. They're not playing in the conference final. They had their hopes and dreams of playing for a Stanley Cup dashed in a subpar performance in Game 7 just a couple of nights ago against the Edmonton Oilers. But the fact of the matter is, no one expected that Vancouver would be here. No one expected Vancouver would have the type of season that they had that led to Rick Tocchet winning coach of the year. Like, no one expected that was going to happen, and yet here we are. It did. Everything should feel good for Vancouver on locker cleanout day, media exit interviews, all that stuff. The Vancouver Canucks should be feeling good about where they're at, and yet today's media availability took on a bit of a turn. And so I want to get to two pieces of audio. Chapman, you've got it, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So let's start with Filip Hronek, who was fantastic for Vancouver the majority of the season. However, production in the first half was simply better than it was in the back half and the postseason for Filip Hronek. He was questioned about why that was, and here's what he had to say.
I don't know if you're playing through an injury that you're willing to shed a little bit of light on, but how do you look at sort of the two halves of the season from the production standpoint?
I mean, you named it. Like, first half of the year, I was producing. Second half, I was not.
And why was that, I guess, is the question.
Why? If I know the answer, I probably would do something different, right? When I didn't produce, I would try to change something.
Were you playing through an injury?
No.
Like, we gave you your space all year. We're just trying to ask a few questions at this stage. And
well, what do you want me to say?
I was curious about where the production.
What do you want me to say on, like, on injury? If I didn't have injury, what do you want me to say? I said no.
Carson, this was.
So, there's Filip Hronek, who is steadfast that he wasn't playing through an injury. Part of me feels like that's Filip Hronek not wanting to make any excuses, and that's fine. But if you remember, like earlier last week, Elias Pettersson was sitting at the podium too and was asked about the production and the drop-off and all of that stuff, and it was a similar type of scenario where you had Pettersson essentially say, if I had the answer, I'd tell you, but I don't know. I've got nothing. I don't have anything to give you right now as to why I'm just not producing. And you get that from Hronek. It was like the pissiness level was close to Leon, but not quite Leon, because I feel like Hronek was trying to be honorable here and not use any excuses. But for a player that just kind of reached the level that the Vancouver Canucks did in a season where they weren't expected to do so, it threw me a little bit that it would be as combative as it was with the media.
Yeah, it was a bit, I guess, I don't want to say tense, but that answer mm-hmm. certainly made it. I mean, I didn't get to watch their entire, mm-hmm. Press availability, mm-hmm. but it didn't sound like it was gumdrops and lollipops. It sounded like the Vancouver media was holding these guys accountable for
sure.
for why they failed to continue to play in the playoffs, but
right.
I'm not so upset with the way Hronek answered it. Like, the initial question was, were you playing through something? And he said no.
Yeah.
And then yeah. I don't know who the reporter was, but he pushed back and asked him a second time. And at that point, Hronik's like, I basically just told you no, I wasn't. Now, the idea that him and then Pettersson both kind of weren't sure why they weren't producing, I mean, that's
right.
I wasn't crazy about the answer. Oh, if I knew, I would tell you. Well, no, it's got to be a little bit deeper mm-hmm. than that. Like,
sure,
we have jobs as reporters, and you know, sometimes we may push a little too hard, but I think right. in some regards, I think the people who pay money to go watch these organizations, my philosophy has always been they deserve answers when things aren't going right. And
well, and if it's you our don't job have to, the answer, though,
right,
if you don't have the answer as a player, or you can't disclose the answer, or don't want to disclose the answer, it becomes a little bit more difficult. Like, do I believe Filip Hronek was hampered by something? I do. Did he want to use it as an excuse? No. And I think that that's kind of where there's the disconnect, because the questioning was fair. Wasn't an issue in my book. Hronek could have very easily been like, yeah, I was dealing with something. That's, I mean, moving forward, I'd like to like not be dealing with something. But at the end of the day, like, everyone's dealing with something in the playoffs, right? So I view it as a player not wanting to use an excuse and trying to be accountable without having the answer readily available, like, I was hampered by something.
Well, I think there's a way you answer that. I mean, look at the way William Karlsson mm-hmm. answered the question when he was asked. Like, he kind of had fun with
isn't
it.
Isn't chilling?
Yeah, like, he had fun with it. Like, and nobody looked at it as, oh, well, this is an excuse. Like, okay, he was honest with us. Like, something was wrong.
Well, sure, but at the end of the day, like, you can do that when you've won. Like, you can't do if Filip Hronek's like, yeah, my shoulder wasn't chilling, he'd be lit up by the media in Canada.
Well, but
like,
there's a
lot of factors that allow William Karlsson to be who he is.
Well, the fact that he's William Karlsson and he's a beloved.
Well, there's that, but at the same time, like, Bruce Cassidy told us so much, right? Like,
yeah,
final game of the year, Game 7, like. He was asked point blank about William Karlsson. He's like, yeah, he was playing through something. So Karlsson has the ability to just say, yeah, no, hamstring. You know what I mean? Like, it was more understood beforehand. I don't think it's the same scenario. Now, I do want to get to Elias Pettersson, because I referenced him earlier in this conversation, and last week he was asked the same question that Filip Hronek was. And at that time, Pettersson didn't have any answers, right? Come to find out, Pettersson had been dealing with a knee injury since January. It's not going to require surgery, but he is going to need to rest and recover. There were conversations, brief as they were, about potentially shutting him down. Rick Tocchet mentioned that it was kind of a tendonitis situation. But Pettersson was asked about getting away from the game and like what the summer's going to look like for him. And I thought his response was phenomenal.
Yeah. It will be nice to get a break from everything. Obviously, it's been a very noisy season in terms of contracts and how shit I've been the last 3 months, you guys said. So it'll be nice to just get a break from that, but I'm just excited to get a little break here and then get back on the horse again, train hard, and come in best shape possible for next season.
Amazing. He calls it a noisy year because of the contract and then how bleep he's been according to you guys.
Yeah.
Now, it's objective that Elias Pettersson was not as good in the back half of the season as he was at the beginning of the season. But if you're not going to disclose that you're playing with an injury, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt after the fact. So rightly calling out a player who is now the highest paid player on the Vancouver Canucks, who an organization has committed a lot of money and a lot of term to, if you're not going to be forthright and upfront about what you're dealing with, you're going to be questioned when you're not performing, especially when you were as good as you were through the first 55 games of the year. I love the dig. I love the tension, but Pettersson's not in the right here. He just isn't.
No, and I think maybe it's because he's young, he's a little inexperienced, especially at something like this. But there's ways that you can answer these questions. And, you know, I think Vancouver, it's, I don't know if it's the toughest market to play in, but I have this feeling that any Canadian market is quite tough. Yeah. And the media will hold players, they'll hold their feet to the fire when things go wrong. And sure. I have no problem with that. Like I'm a big believer, but I also believe that there's certain lines that you don't cross. I don't think any lines were crossed in the questions.
No.
But I think some and look, I think the other part of it is these guys are still upset. Like they're still pissed because I think they feel like maybe they believe that they were the better team and they didn't show it and that's why they're home and this is their way. Like, remember the year the Golden Knights missed the playoffs, how bad that locker cleanup? That was the worst locker cleanup because every single guy was still, like, upset that they missed the playoffs. Like, this time around, they were upset that they lost, but it had a different feel. Like, you know what? We'll spend the summer. We're going to get healthy. We're going to come back, and we're going to win it next year. Like, that's the vibe I got from locker cleanup day this year. And I don't get that vibe from the Canucks.
Here's what I'll say. Actually, you know what? Let's take a break because we're up against it. But I'm gonna explain why this is a good thing for Canucks fans on the other side of this one. It's the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
This is the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM.
Rolling along here on a Thursday, it's the VGK Insider Show. Hour number two coming up. We've got a deep dive into what we learned last night between the Florida Panthers and the New York Rangers. But I'm going to tell you right now why, if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, you like what you heard today out of Filip Hronek, Nikita Zadorov, Elias Pettersson, everybody. They weren't just happy to be there. That's the trend that I picked up on from those players, that they fully expect that they're going to be back there, that they expect that they should have been the team playing in the conference final. As much as the season for Vancouver was a success, it's still a failure. And they're holding on to that failure, expecting to make it better, to make them better. So if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, feel pretty good about where you're at right now. Hour number two, rolling along here. That's coming up next.